Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
You're listening to The Nick Kale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in hour number two here on this Saturday as we roll till 4 o'clock today. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey.com app. A lot to get to here in the final 3 hours of today's festivities. Just got the text from the wife. Wife and daughters in Disney for the last 7 days. They went down last Saturday morning. I couldn't go. Radio show, law school at night, full-time job in the day. A, I'd lose too much money. B, I wouldn't be able to do what I love most, which is talking into a microphone. And then I'd fall behind in law school and miss two classes. So the wife just sends me a text, be home around 8 o'clock tonight. And it just hit me. It's over. My seven-day sabbatical of reverting to being a 15-year-old has come to a close. I now am once again a 37-year-old married with children, which means no fast food. Dishes piling up in the sink. Got to get them done. Laundry basket overloaded with dirty clothes. Got to shave. Got to clean up. You know, it's amazing how a domesticated man, when his wife and children leave, automatically revert back to being a teenager. But it was a glorious week. I look forward to the next time I can go back to those days. But I digress. Corey McCartney, we're going to talk Braves, Dodgers, NLCS with him. He's actually going to join us in about 20 minutes. We had him for 140. He'll join us at 120. Let's get you updated on some college football scores before we get into Arthur Smith and a little Falcons bye week assessment. Number three, Cincinnati leading UCF 14-0. Good one in the Big Ten. Michigan State, number 10 in the country. They are at Indiana today. They're up 7-6. Auburn, how about this? On the road against number 17, Arkansas, they lead 14-3. And you have to wonder if Arkansas is just kind of exasperated at this point, right? 2 weeks ago, they were undefeated. They got shut out by Georgia. Last week, they lose 52-51 to Ole Miss. Went for the two-point conversion at the end of the game. Did not get it. Maybe just a little physically and emotionally drained right now, which would explain Auburn leading by two scores at Arkansas. Death Valley, not the same as, like, you know, LSU at night, great atmosphere. LSU during the day, still pretty good, but Death Valley at night's a little bit different. Bo Morgan, Wendy Adams, they're sweating bullets right now. The Gators trail the Bayou Bengals 7-6. Early in the second quarter. No letdown for Texas A&M after beating Alabama. They lead Missouri 21-0. And number 25, Texas, on top of Okie State 10-3. That one early in the second quarter. Okay, so Falcons bye week, right? 2-3. You play in London. You beat the Jets. You get your second win. You complete the New York sweep. You've dispatched the Giants. You've dispatched the Jets. You get 14 days off, and then coming up after that, you're going to get Jacoby Brissett in the Miami Dolphins. You're going to get Sam, I've returned to my old self, Darnold in the Carolina Panthers, and you're going to get Jameis Winston and the New Orleans Saints. But right now, with the bye, we need to assess two individuals. We'll do the tight end coming up at 140, but let's start with the head coach. I want to give you two pieces of audio first, and then I'm going to give you a good breakdown of where I think Arthur Smith is at this very moment. But let's take a listen to the head coach post-game last week in London, talking about how one win is great, but it doesn't change everything.
Just because you won a game doesn't mean all of a sudden now you've got all the answers, because you see what's coming. All right, what are our issues? What do we need to clean up? Because this is going to be a problem for us if we don't. So I don't look at concern. I think it's more a bit of objective. What can we can correct so these something doesn't turn into a continuous issue for us?
But you know what? I think some continuous wins are on the way. Let's hear one more from the head coach, Arthur Smith, on talking about continuing to get better.
I don't think it surprised me. I just hope we continue to get better. I mean, that's really the name of the game. I know it sounds like a broken record, but that's the truth. That I believe we have. Sometimes it's like a game of whack-a-mole. You know, you're going here, and then you got an issue over here you got to fix, and that's the nature of the job. But I think as a team, I think we're continuing to grow. We just got to continue in the right direction.
I'll tell you right now, I truly believe this. And I was critical of national media members a couple of weeks ago that thought the Falcons could get to 5-3 or 4-4. I thought those guys were insane, most notably Nick Wright from Fox Sports 1. But if you look at it at 2-3 and what they have coming up, 4-4 is absolutely doable. And then all of a sudden you have a second half of the season where you're relevant. You're in the mix. You're in the hunt. You're in the fight for staying alive for a wild card. You ain't winning the division. Tom Brady already got that on lock. But you're still in the mix for that third wild card, that seven seed in the NFC playoffs. And how about this? And we know what our bugaboos have been for 5 years. We know that. But since week two, the Falcons have scored touchdowns on 78.6% of their red zone drives. So 79% of the 14 red zone drives since week two, the Falcons have scored touchdowns. Not settling on Younghoe Koo, our Pro Bowl kicker, but scoring touchdowns, finishing off drives, getting six instead of settling for three. And that is fourth best in the NFL. Now, I get it. It's a four-week sample size. But we are the fourth best red zone offense in the NFL over the last month. And the Falcons have turned all 16 red zone opportunities into points, field goals included, including week one. So over the course of the entire season, pretty darn good. They are one of only five teams to do that through 5 weeks. That according to Michael Rothstein of ESPN. So Arthur Smith right now doing something that for the last 5 years, this team has been unable to do. Punching it in the red zone and punching it in the end zone. And I want to take inventory right now, not Arthur Smith against the Belichicks and the McVays and the Shanahans and the Carrolls and the Tomlins and everybody else that's got a championship. I want to assess and judge and evaluate Arthur Smith amongst the seven first-year head coaches in the NFL. Seven rookie head coaches. And I would say right now, Arthur Smith, definitively number two. The best rookie coach right now is Brandon Staley of the LA Chargers. They are 4-1. He's got a rock star quarterback in Justin Herbert. He's got weapons galore in Mike Williams and Keenan Allen and Austin Eckler. He's got Bosa on the defensive side of the ball. He's got I'm drawing a blank on the safety, who's unbelievably good, Derwin James. Chargers have a really good roster. So he inherited, I think, a better situation than the Falcons. Brandon Staley, Chargers 4-1, best rookie head coach. And then you've got Arthur Smith at number two, with the Falcons sitting at 2-3, with a legit chance over the next 3-4 weeks to get to 4-4, or dare I say 5-3. I don't know if we can sweep the board the next 3 weeks, but I'll take 2 out of 3. I'll get to 4-4, and I'll take my chances. And then after that, guys, look at some of these coaches. Here's the way I would rank them right now. Brandon Staley, number one, Chargers 4-1. Arthur Smith, number two, Falcons 2-3. Number three, I'd go Robert Saleh, who Arthur Smith and the Falcons just beat. Just beat the Jets last week in London. The Jets are 1-4. Number four, and I don't think this guy's any good at all, but then when you see who I have 5, 6, and 7, you'll see why I got him at number four. I've got Nick Sirianni, the Eagles rookie head coach, number four out of the 7 rookie head coaches, merely because the Eagles have 2 wins. They are 2-4, but he's awful. He is going to ride Jalen Hurts into the dirt. They don't run the ball. They're not creative. I don't even think Nick Sirianni was an offensive coordinator before, and he becomes a head coach. And I still think the play caller for the Eagles, and if you'll watch the Eagles and the Bucks on Thursday night football, I know it finished 28-22, and the Eagles covered by a half point. They were getting 6.5. They only lost by 6. Nick Sirianni's in over his head. They fired Doug Peterson, a guy who won a Super Bowl 4 years ago with Nick Foles, and the solution was Nick Sirianni. Imagine being a front office executive and saying, you know what, I think we need to move on from Doug Peterson and let's go with Nick Sirianni. Awful. Number five, David Culley, Texans, 1-4. I've got him as the 5th best rookie coach because they ain't got Deshaun Watson. They ain't even got Tyrod Taylor anymore. I mean, they're rocking it with Davis Mills, rookie out of Stanford. So I got him at number five. Dan Campbell, who's got no business being a head coach, 0-5 with the Detroit Lions. Although at least they were competitive against the Vikings last week in a barn burner that finished 19-17. One thing I'll give Dan Campbell for, one little reprieve, it's the Lions. Yeah, you could bring back Vince Lombardi. I'm not sure it would help. And it damn sure don't help that Jared Goff's your quarterback. The most unimpressive number one overall quarterback who actually wins games, at least when he was with the Rams, that I've ever seen. I watched Jared Goff and I'm like, there ain't not a damn thing impressive about that dude. Not the arm, not the size, not the mobility. He don't even look right in pads. And then number seven, the worst of the rookie head coaches, my boy Urban Meyer. Jaguars, 0-5, steamrolled week after week. So I think when you look at it, Arthur Smith, if you evaluate him amongst his peers, first-year rookie head coaches, it's a class of 7. I think Arthur Smith behind Brandon Staley has been better than Robert Saleh, Nick Sirianni, David Culley, Dan Campbell, Urban Meyer. And since week 2, red zone offense no longer a problem. Yes, Kyle Pitts, but absolutely yes, Cordarrelle Patterson. And if you're looking at it, just go back and pull up like on Google NFL offseason tracker, free agency tracker, and look at all the big moves, the big contracts, whether it was free agents or whether it was via trade, and pull up some of the big ones, right? Like the headline grabbing ones that all the talk shows talked about. And then look at the Cordarrelle Patterson signing. Cordarrelle Patterson has been a blessing. What, 30, 31 years old, been in the league about a decade, and now all of a sudden, he's one of the most dynamic players in this league. He can run the ball. He can catch it. You know, he's Darren Sproles, but 5 inches and 40 pounds bigger. Doing everything. Doing absolutely everything for this offense. An offense post Julio Jones. An offense missing Calvin Ridley. I mean, raise your hand if you thought back in the summer that in mid-October, Cordarrelle Patterson would be a boss. I didn't. I thought it would be a solid signing. You know, a little return game, a little, you know, jet sweep, a little trickery here and there, change of pace. I didn't think he'd maybe be on his way to a Pro Bowl. But that's kind of what we're looking at, especially in the NFC where Christian McCaffrey's been hurt, Saquon Barkley's hurt, Dalvin Cook is hurt. And Cordarrelle Patterson wasn't expected to even be our premier back. That was Mike Davis. So good work out of Terry Fontenot. He found a home run in free agency. 404-741-0929. Braves Dodgers this evening. You guys have like three TVs? If you don't, go out and get one because you're going to need it. Football, football, football. But hey, NLCS game one. If you only have one TV, my guess is game one gets the nod. We'll talk about the Braves and the Dodgers. Max on Max, Corey McCartney, formerly of Fox Sports South and Sports Illustrated. We'll talk Braves with him. Stay there.
With more Nick Cale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
This Saturday, 1 hour from now, you'll hear from Danny Cannell, CBS Sports College Football Analyst, David Walker from SB Nation and The Falcoholic in the final hour of the show, as well as our picks, Sunday selections, before we get out of here at 4 o'clock today. But we got game one tonight. It's the Braves, it's the Dodgers, it's a rematch, and this time it is at Truist Park for the first couple of games. As we go out to the WadeFord.com hotline, Atlanta's Ford dealer, and we welcome in Corey McCartney to talk a little Braves baseball, formerly of Fox Sports South, Sports Illustrated, Baseball Writers Association of America. Corey, we appreciate a couple of minutes. How are you?
Hey, great. How you doing?
I'm doing well. I want to start with just kind of the theme of this series, because last year it went to the max, seven games. Tonight it's game one. Does it feel like this rematch has the ability to once again be epic now that the Braves actually have home field advantage?
Yeah, I mean, I think it does. And I think beyond that, I know there's no Ronald Acuna Jr. Obviously, Marcelo Zuna is not a part of the Braves roster right now. But I think this is a deeper, despite the fact that Jorge Soler is out, I think this is an overall deeper Braves roster, one that's hitting on a lot more cylinders than they were at this point last year. So while this is going to be a massive challenge for them, especially when you look at what they're going to have to face pitching-wise in this series, both in the rotation and the bullpen, I think this Braves team is better equipped than they were a year ago to take on the Dodgers.
You know, last year at this time, Max Fried pitched really, really well in multiple games against the Dodgers and was unable to get a win in either start. Is he at the point now where nationally amongst baseball writers, he's acknowledged as a true number one, or is there still some work to be done in a spot like this?
I mean, I think, you get the numbers, and certainly you think about since the All-Star break, nobody in baseball, no starter had a better ERA than Max Fried did. And obviously he held it, did more than hold his own in the NLDS against the Brewers. I think it's about owning those moments, right? And this is a moment for Max Fried tonight. I mean, getting your team ahead against the defending champs, I think that's where you start to build that ace persona more so than just in the numbers themselves. Because, we see a lot of guys who have these, these hot stretches, especially, this day and age, with just so many elite, really great arms out there. But I think it's owning those moments that really elevates you in that way.
So with Max tonight, Charlie Morton, game two, Ian Anderson, based on the rest and the schedule, do you think that is the right approach, or was Charlie Morton better off in a different spot?
I mean, he's going to be going against Max Scherzer now that the Dodgers are all – I mean, it looks like a bullpen game here in game one with Corey Knebel getting the start just like they did in game five against the Giants in the NLDS. So, ultimately, I've been playing into the Braves' favor here where you have – the best pitcher on the Dodgers rotation going against a guy who's been there, done that, and performed on this stage, and has really been the veteran, stabilizer for this bullpen. So I think this rotation, So I think it sets up pretty well for the Braves from that end. But what happens tonight? Do they take advantage? How deep into the staff is Dave Roberts going to have to go, and what does that mean for the remainder of these next few games before we get a day off? So I think things are definitely set up pretty well for the Braves with the pitching matchups.
Corey McCartney joining us here on the WadeFord.com hotline. You can follow him on Twitter at Corey J. McCartney. Where would the Braves be right now without Jock Peterson?
I think the there'd be a surplus of pearls in Atlanta right now if he wasn't. Now, I mean, obviously, think about not only him, but I mean Eddie Rosario as well. I mean, they had 6 runs driven in by their pinch hitters in the series. Yeah, I mean, that's more than all the other teams in the postseason at this point combined. You really have to. You have to go back to the 96 Braves to find a team that had as many runs driven in at this point in the postseason than what the Braves have so far. I mean, Peterson's been fantastic. He's obviously been more than just the production. It's been, I think, a shot in the arm in terms of the vibe in that clubhouse. I think you can look past Nick Markakis, and it's Freddie Freeman's team, but certainly there was you're trying to reestablish what it means in that clubhouse to be the Braves. And I think, Jock Peterson has come in and just added that fun vibe that, maybe post Ronald Acuña Jr.'s injury, there was some question as, all right, what's the rest of the season going to look like? And I think Jock Peterson came in there and gave them a completely different feel. And obviously we've seen it play out up and down that lineup with the way they're approaching the game.
You know, Corey, I can't ever recall this happening, and maybe you can maybe just, put it into the proper context and perspective. But, I mean, this was supposed to be an outfield of Pache, Ozuna, and Ronald Acuña, and now it's 3 completely different guys. I mean, it's like a hockey line shift.
It really is. I mean, you have to give, all due credit to Alex Anthopoulos for not folding. I mean, it could have very easily at the deadline said, you know what, we lost our best player, but Freddie Freeman, certainly the most meaningful guy, but the guy who was having the best season to that point was Ronald Acuña Jr. when he went down, and say, you know what, we'll see you in 2022. But to go out and reestablish that outfield the way they did without really giving up really much of anything, and not only to get those guys, but to have them all perform, I think that's the most, to me, impressive thing of all this, is you get a few guys and maybe 1 or 2 of them deliver, but they've all had their moments, and I think that's been the most compelling part of this, is that they just swung for the fences, and every one of these moves thus far has worked out.
I look at this Dodgers pitching staff in this rotation, and probably a good chance Max Scherzer wins the NL Cy Young. I mean, he's unbelievable. He's a bulldog, but I feel like Julio Urias doesn't get the love maybe he deserves. This is a guy with a 20-win season and a sub-3 ERA. How talented is this guy, and what type of issue does that present for the Braves?
Yeah, and then obviously, Walker Buehler as well. I mean, they're just so deep in starting pitching. It's interesting when you look at what the strength of this Dodgers rotation is, and I bring in Julio Urias into this, and Buehler and Scherzer, is they throw a ton of 4-seam fastballs. They're among the top 3 pitching staffs in all of baseball in their reliance on 4-seam fastballs. The Braves hit the 2nd most home runs on 4-seam fastballs. Freddie Freeman has the 5th highest weighted on base average in the majors against 4-seam fastballs. So, this Dodgers pitching staff is absolutely elite. But what they do really well is what the Braves also perform really well against. And, they say styles makes fights. So I think in a lot of ways, this ends up being a pretty decent matchup for the Braves in terms of what they like to do at the plate.
So let's build off of that for a second, because in the first series against the Brewers, we saw the Braves be patient at the plate and work counts and get pitch counts up, knowing the Dodgers like to throw a lot of 4-seamers, and we can certainly rake off of 4-seamers. Do you expect us to be more aggressive first pitch swinging?
I think so. That was honestly one of the tent poles for the Braves for a large part of the season. Was being aggressive early in counts. And I think you're going to see that happen a lot more in this game and try to, not only put the ball in play, but put some pressure on that Dodgers defense. And it's not going to do a lot to drive up those pitch counts, but it's not as though that Dodgers bullpen isn't fantastic either. So I think it's about trying to maximize those opportunities, feast on what you do well, and see if, you can get a rise in that batting average on balls in play. So I would anticipate some aggressiveness from the Braves in this series.
I hate to ask the legacy question, but I'm going to do it anyway. If the Braves were able to finish what they couldn't last year against LA, and maybe destiny's on this team's side and the stars are going to align, and we beat the Dodgers in 6 or 7 and go on to win the World Series and do it without potentially an MVP like Ronald, what would this do for Brian Snicker's legacy?
I think it would do a lot in terms of, getting him some some love that he's not necessarily always gotten. And you know, I think we just sometimes get so wrapped up nowadays where everything is revolving around analytics, and you see guys like Dave Roberts who get so much love for the way that they push buttons in games and using platoons and knowing, you know, exactly when to get a guy out there because the numbers say this is when you should get a guy out there. I love numbers. I'm obsessed with analytics. But, you know, I think there's also a lot to be said about a guy who just gets players who really want to play for them. And yep. You can go way back to when he took over for Freddy Gonzalez at the mid part of the season. Those Braves went to bat for him. And I mean, quite literally. I mean, you had guys like Freddie Freeman and Nick Markakis that were beating down the door saying, this is our manager. And, you know, I think for him to get that, to take that step this season, whatever form that takes, if they get to the World Series, win it all, I think it would be massive for his legacy and the way we view Brian Snicker.
Speaking of Freddie Freeman, once again, another big moment in the postseason. We know he's going to be a Brave, and we know he's going to be a Brave for a long time. But in your opinion, what do you think that contract's going to look like?
I think you're going to have to look at north of 30 to 35 per. Maybe it goes 7 years. Maybe you do something sneaky like the Dodgers did, where you bake in a big signing bonus like they did for Mookie Betts, where you don't necessarily have to take the cap hit every year, on it. So I think they could potentially do something like that, where they're a little bit more flexible with getting him the money, but without trying to really hamper what they can do on a year-to-year basis. Remember, I mean, you signed Ronald Acuña Jr. and Ozzie Albies to these sweetheart deals. Mm-hmm. And if you do that with the intent of ultimately keeping your centerpiece and your foundational piece through this era of Braves baseball in a Braves uniform. So I anticipate it gets done. I would not be surprised to see it happen before Christmas. I don't think he's going to wait too long. I think he's going to want his future in hand just as much as the Braves will.
Some closing moments here. Corey McCartney joining us, formerly Fox Sports South, Sports Illustrated, great baseball writer. I don't think anybody liked the way Game 5 ended a few nights ago between L.A. and San Francisco. I've heard people, we need the robot umpires and all this. Is there a solution to this, or is this just the human element of humans making mistakes?
I think, to me, the solution is to just open up replay, right? And I think you just give more freedom to what is reviewable. We think about the Braves and Brewers on the Adam Duvall pop fly that was, a phantom catch there. Could have hurt them. Ultimately, didn't they end up, delivering in that inning? Obviously, the end of the Giants-Dodgers game. I think the fact that we have so many elements of the game that aren't reviewable and you have replay, I think a lot of people have issue with that. So, I think that's ultimately how this thing gets itself sorted out, is just allowing more freedom in terms of, if it happens on the field, let's have the ability to have replay go back and show us what really happened and add some actual power to the proceedings here that I think have been missing.
All right. Last hour, I had a college football guest on, and he said Georgia would beat Alabama by 2 touchdowns if they played today. I'm going to put you on the spot. I need 2 takes. Who wins Dodgers-Braves Game 1, and who do you got for the series?
I think that Braves are going to take Game 1. I think I'm going to say Braves in 6. If it goes 7, I think the Dodgers have too much depth, but I'll take Braves in 6.
Okay. Corey McCartney, great stuff, man. Really appreciate the time. You can follow Corey on Twitter at Corey J. McCartney. Thanks, man.
Hey, thank you.
There he is, Corey McCartney, Baseball Writers Association of America. Braves, Game 1. Get it done tonight. And he's got Braves in 6. Although if it gets to a Game 7, another heartbreak for the city of Atlanta. I don't know that we could take a Game 7 loss. I actually think we would actually be better off, if we're not going to win the series, going out in 6. I can live with 6. I could probably live with 7, too, depending on the circumstances. Although, if we're up 3-1 and we give 3 in a row back, that would be unacceptable. But I did think it was interesting what he brought up there about the legacy of Brian Snicker, because in this world of, and I think, look, he gets criticized for the way he uses the bullpen, and some managers are all about the numbers and the metrics, and I know we live in this world of data, and all that's great. I mean, I love odds, I love probability, I mean, I love betting on sports, and that's all numbers. But there is still something to be said for a guy like Brian Snicker, who, as Corey mentioned, the guys go to bat for you. The dudes just like Brian Snicker, and they perform for him. Hence all the division championships, hence this run when nobody thought it was possible back on Memorial Day or early June. 80 degrees. We'll see. Game one coming up tonight. Max Fried due to get a dub against L.A. 404-741-0929. That is the number. Nick Kale on Twitter, K-A-Y-A-L. Poll question is up at 929 The Game on Twitter. What has been the more unexpected or great run? Hawks to the Eastern Conference Finals? Braves to the NLCS? Let me see if I can give you guys a quick update on that number. It was decisively Hawks. Yeah, it was 63% Hawks, 37% Braves. We'll see how that shakes out over the remaining 2.5 hours. We'll get back to the Falcons bye week assessment number two. We did Arthur Smith last segment. We'll do the tight end coming up next, because all of you haters out there after 2 weeks were saying, get him involved. Well, now he's chasing history. We'll explain. Way down here we all got that southern draw. Take our time when we talk, hey y'all. Yeah, don't take much for us to have it all. Something about a night.
Now back to the Nick Kale Show on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
All right, good to have you guys in, hanging out here on this Saturday as we roll till 4 o'clock. 404-741-0929. Still to come, David Walker from the Falcoholic. Danny Cannell, who was on with Dukes and Bell earlier this week, talking dogs and college football. And it will be a bullpen game for the Dodgers tonight. You heard our last guest, Corey McCartney, mentioning that. Bob Nightingale tweeting this about 45 minutes ago. Dodgers going with the bullpen approach tonight, starting reliever Corey Knebel, who also started on Thursday. So this is an opportunity with our guy Max at home in a spot where the Dodgers are going bullpen. Now, Corey's pretty good, 4-0, a 2.45 ERA in the regular season, 30 strikeouts. But he just worked two nights ago, so you know he's only going to be good for an inning, maybe an inning and change. Let's jump on them right out of the gate, swinging, because you know what's looming in the following games. Guys like Max Scherzer, Walker Buehler, Urias. Let's steal something right out of the gate here, huh? 404-741-0929. College football scores. We'll get you updated on that real quick before we get to Kyle Pitts. Down in Death Valley, LSU 21, Florida 6. The offensive genius, Dan Mullen, ringing up 6 points in the first half against a mediocre, average at best, LSU Tiger football team. You hate to see it. You just hate to see it. Cincinnati crushing UCF 35-7. Auburn up at the half, 14-10 on Arkansas. Upset alert, Indiana leading undefeated Michigan State 9-7 at the half. And Texas A&M rolling over Missouri 28-7. Halftime in Austin, Texas leading Oklahoma State 17-13. Georgia-Kentucky coming up a little bit after 3:30 today. Tennessee-Ole Miss tonight. Alabama-Mississippi State. So a busy day in college football. But let's get to part two of our Falcons bye week assessment. We kicked off the second hour talking about Arthur Smith, how he compares to the other six rookie head coaches in the NFL. Well, speaking of rookies, let's evaluate our rookie tight end, fourth overall draft pick, Kyle Pitts. Because the first couple of weeks, we weren't happy. Well, he's not doing much. He's not being utilized. Arthur Smith isn't game planning and scheming him in. And now all of a sudden, Kyle Pitts looks every bit as advertised, and is off to a really good start in his first 5 weeks as a professional football player. I'm going to show you just how good in a moment. But first, let's hear from a couple of individuals that know a thing or two about Falcons football. Let's hear from Dave Archer talking with Kyle Pitts, the rookie tight end.
I don't know, Kyle. I guess just start with the touchdown. Tell me about the big grin that was on your face. You finally got that one notched off, your first touchdown in the NFL. How'd it feel?
It felt great. Just all the preparation and the practice that, you know, all through the week, all the hard work that we put in, and to see it come to fruition was pretty exciting.
And you're starting to see all of it come together. It's been a slow, gradual build. But if, again, if we go back to the preseason, what did we not see in exhibition games for the Falcons with Arthur Smith? we didn't see the starters, remember? I mean, Kyle Pitts had, what, one catch the entire exhibition slate? We didn't see basically anybody on offense. So it really should have been no surprise to anybody that the first couple of weeks were a bit sluggish. But now you start to hit your stride. And that's what they're doing, and that's what Kyle Pitts is doing. Let's take a listen. Here is Wes Durham assessing the tight end.
Other guys stepped up, and I think the step up, we were more than happy to see the step up in Kyle Pitts. I think that's the win from last Sunday. As much as the game and things like that, you overcame your minus one takeaway giveaway, obviously. But at the same time, you got your guy, the one everybody's been looking to, really made an impression last Sunday and put some things on tape that give a lot of people pause for concern when Atlanta comes off the bye next week.
And here's the thing. So many people were freaking out over Kyle Pitts after 2 weeks. Every one of you can relax now. I get it. Maybe you didn't want tight end. I didn't. I wanted quarterback in the draft. But I wasn't freaking out because I know historically rookie tight ends in this league do not ball out from jump street. It just very rarely happens. But now, Kyle Pitts, on the doorstep of history, in regards to pace, I'm going to give you some numbers. So the all-time rookie record for tight end receiving yards in the National Football League goes back to 1961. Hard to believe this number is actually true, considering it's 1961. I didn't know that they threw the football in 1961, but apparently they did. Mike Ditka, yes, the coach, Mike Ditka, back in 1961 was actually a tight end, and he caught 1,076 yards receiving, just shy of 1,100 yards. Right now, Kyle Pitts is on pace for 1,047. So he's 29 yards off the pace of Mike Ditka, circa 1961. That according to James Palmer of the NFL Network. So I think we can relax, guys. And you might say, well, okay, he's on pace. All right. Look, there has been this explosion of tight ends to a different degree over the last, let's call it two decades, right? Tony Gonzalez, Rob Gronkowski, Antonio Gates, Jason Witten, Travis Kelce, just go through the list. You know, receivers in a tight end body that are total matchup nightmares. I'm going to give you those guys rookie receiving yards. Here's their numbers, just to put you at ease with Mr. Pitts so that you know he's the real deal. In his rookie season, Tony Gonzalez recorded 368 yards receiving. Tony Gonzalez, yes, the Tony G from the Falcons, the Chiefs, first ballot Hall of Famer, maybe the greatest to ever do it. 368 yards. Antonio Gates, converted basketball player, busts out with the Chargers, Rivers, Tomlinson, Gates. Fun group to watch, right? Antonio Gates is a rookie, 389 yards receiving. Well, what about Jason Witten? Forget the bad stint in the Monday Night Football booth with the toupee. Let's just talk about Jason Witten, the unstoppable tight end, which in a weird way, this is not like a shot at him. I just never understood how he was always so open because he was never really that quick. Great hands, dependable, great security blanket, but he wasn't like a freakish nightmare of a specimen. Like, you could tackle him pretty easily, unlike Gronk. He didn't run as fast as Antonio Gates. He wasn't as athletic as Tony Gonzalez, but he's probably one of the five greatest tight ends of all time. And as a rookie, he had 347 yards receiving. And here we have Kyle Pitts on pace for 1,047. Three times Jason Witten. Three times Tony Gonzalez. Three times Antonio Gates. Twice as good as Gronk. And nipping at the heels of Mike Ditka. I don't know. It seems to me like Kyle Pitts might have this thing figured out after 5 weeks. And I think Arthur Smith is figuring out how to use him. I think Matt is starting to depend on him and knows where he will be. And it's funny how a football season plays out, right? Because I made the prediction back in late July, early August when we got to camp and we did our Falcons bold predictions. My number one prediction was Calvin Ridley would be an all-pro. Not a pro bowler, but an all-pro. And right now, Calvin Ridley is MIA. And it's at the point now where you look at the offense and you say, as Wes mentioned, as Dave Archer mentioned, it's the Kyle Pitts breakout party. And we also have Cordarrelle Patterson, who was probably the third, fourth, or fifth option going into this season from a weaponry standpoint. He might have become number one or 1A. And that leaves us with Calvin Ridley. And I heard Andy and Randy talking about this week, and they were just kind of spitballing and, you know, loose speculation of would it be totally unforeseeable that the Falcons trade Calvin Ridley coming up on the expiration of his rookie contract. And the more I think about it, you've got Pitts on a rookie deal. You've got Cordarrelle Patterson. And you know you have to invest what money you will have moving forward into some guys on defense to bolster that side of the ball. Maybe some more stuff on the offensive line. And, you know, eventually Matt's going to leave and there's going to be a new quarterback in the next one, two, or three NFL drafts. It makes me wonder if, in fact, there would be some merit to either not re-signing Calvin Ridley, not picking up that option, or doing a deal and trading him. It's kind of almost wild to think that. But with Pitts, with Patterson, and, oh, by the way, needing whatever money you're going to have in the future to address other issues, because you can't have all your money just invested in offense. You're seeing that with the Chiefs. I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs are what, 2-3? That's because they had to pay. And look, it's a great problem to have, and it's just a reality. I mean, you had to pay Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. You pay all those guys. Well, in a cap sport, you can only have so much money allocated to an offense. You got to have somebody on defense. And the Chiefs are showing you right now how void they are outside of the Honey Badger and Chris Jones. That's kind of like where the Falcons are at a much lower level, where you got so much money invested on offense. So the Calvin Ridley thing, I think, will be an interesting thing to watch in the coming months. 404-741-0929. But, man, Kyle Pitts. He, you know what? I hate to use the unicorn phrase. You hear it with Anthony Davis. You hear it with a select few. But on pace for 1,047 yards. And he's now, it's like, okay, he's hitting his stride. And most rookie tight ends, even the GOATs, do not do that in year one. Tony Gonzalez, 368. Antonio Gates, 389. Jason Witten, 347. Rob Gronkowski, 546. Those are all Hall of Famers. And here's Kyle Pitts busting out. If I'm a Falcons fan, I am feeling really good about that. I'm also feeling good about the schedule coming up out of the bye. You get Jacoby Brissett 2 weeks to prepare for the Dolphins. They stink. They got injuries galore. They've actually been a big underachiever this year. Then you get the Panthers. They've lost two in a row. Sam Darnold's returned to earth. And then you get Jameis Winston and the Saints. So it's setting up for an interesting second half if we can come out of the bye and get 2 out of 3. If we get to 4-4, keep Kyle Pitts developing, keep Cordarrelle Patterson being a total jack of all trades, 50 yards rushing, 65 yards receiving. Arthur Smith all of a sudden like, I got some guys. I don't have Julio Jones. And who knows what the deal is with Calvin Ridley. All of a sudden the offense looks good. We're scoring 79% in the red zone. Pretty good. 404-741-0929. All right. We will come back and kick off our number three, a little college football. We'll get you set for the Dogs and the Cats, Georgia, Kentucky, coming up in just about 40 minutes or so. We'll hear from the head coach, Kirby Smart, both on JT Daniels. Surprise, surprise. It's a daily JT Daniels update. And also Kentucky. What do they have to offer? The running back's pretty good. So is that defense. We'll hear what Kirby had to say about the Cats coming up next. Stay there.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.